Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
John McCain, el presidente que todos en Estados Unidos estábamos esperando.
I'm John McCain and I approve this message.
John McCain es un amigo de nuestra comunidad. Es una persona que no tiene partido porque él trabaja con todas las personas para resolver los problemas. Por eso, para mí, McCain me cae muy bien.
I'm John McCain and I approve this message.
I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I
Well. What I have to do for a living.
My need is such, I pretend to.
It is the Savage Nation. We're watching the. Well, I don't even know what to say. I would say the campaign, the charade, the decline and fall of the American Empire. Yeah. Anyway, turn it off. Here we are in an hour. The polls close, and we know what's going to happen already. And North Carolina is going to obviously go to Obama for obvious reasons. Indiana is going to go to Hillary. Ho hum. And on and on and on. On and on and on. I see in the newspapers today that there's a rumor that Clint Eastwood aims to revive Dirty Harry in a new movie. And I'm reading here from the Daily News. Clint Eastwood's gunslinging, smack-talking tough guy Dirty Harry is reportedly returning for a few more brawls on the big screen. The 77-year-old Eastwood plans to make a new film starring the legendary Inspector Harry Callahan. And it says Eastwood wants his Dirty Harry character immortalized in five movies to go out in style. Now, Eastwood's 77, so let's say they start shooting yesterday. If he plays the character, comes out when he's 78, they can't call it Dirty Harry anymore. They got to call it, like, Forgetful Harry or Rickety Harry or what are they going to do? How don't these people know when to stop? Can't they just – Johnny Carson did it right. The guy had 20 years left that he could have worked. He got off the stage, put on weight, ate, stuffed himself, walked around, put on a big bean on him. No one's heard from him again. But he left in style. These other people just won't let go. They can't stop. It's like the octogenarian rock and roll stars. Well, they're close to being octogenarians. You know, how long can they go on? Can't they give someone else a break? The greediest generation in history. The most narcissistic generation in history. What would you like to talk about? I'm in L.A. right now, out of a new area, you know, come down here once in a while. In my studio is not my dog, Teddy, but his cousin, the all-white, Cash. Now, this is why I got Teddy a poodle, is because of the cousin. The cousin is a cockapoo. He's like double the size. He must be 20, 25 pounds of pure white. He looks like a, I don't know, he's a strong dog, runs. He's a great animal. He has the eyes of a weird, like he looks like an old clown. He looks like somebody works for Ringling Brothers, like in the clown department. He has eyes like a human. Friendly, beautiful dog. And he's now in the studio with me. He's Teddy's cousin. Teddy's 10 or 11 pounds. So when Obama came on the screen, he growled. When Hillary came on the screen, he barked. When McCain came on the screen, the TV screen, we're watching the return, he laughed. I know dogs can't laugh, but he can laugh. I saw a laugh break out when McCain came out in that wooden walk of his and spoke in Spanish to La Raza. Isn't it intriguing to you that John McCain would bend over backwards for every pressure group in the country except the one that put him in office, the conservative base? It's amazing to me what these people are all about. That's why we played the Great Pretender. So play the Great Pretender, and I'll come back and take regular calls in a second. Now, talking to 10 to 20 seconds, and then I'm going to warm it up. I got it warmed up. phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I got a killer hangover. Ripper, horrible. I'll turn it off. I got a ripper hangover. I mean, I'm here. I'm focused. I could fly a plane if I had to. I could do anything. But I got a hangover. I could Why? Because last night was my son's birthday. Went out with 20 people and, you know, 20 screaming younger. I mean, God, I'm not used to this Hollywood lifestyle. I can't handle it, actually. I cannot wait back. I can't wait to get back to Rip Van Winkle. I mean, I'm fundamentally Rip Van Winkle, you know, my life. Quiet to myself, watching the world go by, you know, mulling it all over. This was like the reverse. It's like pulling me inside out, screaming Italian restaurant in Hollywood. All of the girls, I don't understand this thing. I mean, I don't know whether I'm angry or jealous or a combination of both. Nobody gets married. The girls, don't they have maternal instincts, these girls? I don't understand it. Do they want to get married? In my generation, if a guy wasn't married at 30, they figured, you know, they figured something was wrong with him. That's all. You had to get married. She said, oh, well, that's why there's so many divorces. There really weren't, percentage-wise, as many divorces in my generation. You'd say, well, they were all miserable. They weren't all miserable. It's the nature of mankind, man plus woman, you know, and that's it. I don't understand. I mean, these girls, like, don't they have an instinct to get married and have a baby, push a stroller? You know, don't they look at themselves? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, I see these girls at 35 or 40 walking around L.A., and it's a frightful scene to look at. It's unbelievable. I don't know what they're going to do with themselves after a certain age. You get married, I mean, but the guys don't want to commit, most of them, the young guys. They just want to have a good time. I mean, is that good, bad, indifferent? I don't know. I know that it can't be a lifestyle for the human race. It's impossible. If everyone lives like King Farouk, where does it end up? You end up with a fat behind on a bar stool, you know, a drunk with a burnt out liver at 43. That's where it ends up. I don't care how much beta carotene you take. You cannot compensate for a certain decadent lifestyle with vitamins. That's all. Why am I talking about this? Because I would rather talk about this than Obama and Hillary and McCain. I would rather stop it already. I can't take it. But if you want to talk about Obama and Hillary and McCain, I'll talk about it. Or if you want to talk about the death of the West, as evidenced by the Hollywood lifestyle, and in your town it's probably the same thing. I mean, everybody wants to be here. You know, I was thinking about something. I was walking around Rodeo Drive over the weekend. I put on the sunglasses and the hat and walked around alone to look. Now, I've been there before, and it's easy to criticize the raw consumerism. But my observations were actually quite diabolical on Saturday on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. I became diabolical in that I saw, like, crowds of Russian tourists, Japanese tourists, and the Russian women were, like, posing in front of cars that weren't theirs. They would, like, be with their husbands, and they'd walk out in the street and in front of a, you know, a mere BMW, and they would, like, you know, like, throw their hip to the side and speak in Russian, like, take my picture, make sure you get the grill in. And I'm saying, I thought there may have been more dignity in fighting the Nazis and starving to death in Stalingrad than being liberated to become like a hound of fashion on Rodeo Drive. There's got to be some dignity beyond this. This cannot be the reason for living, to just consume and show off and say, I've been here and I went there and look what I am and look at my ring and look at my this and look at my that. And the stores and the people all want to take pictures in front of a store. I don't know, you know, to me it was never that. I'm not saying that I don't own things I do. Okay, but I don't live for them, and I could live without them. I didn't have them, and I have them. Could do without them. I told you 1,000 times. I don't reject consumerism, but I don't embrace consumerism. You want to give me a limo? I could sit in the back of a limo. Big deal. What is it? It's a long car. Okay, that's rather uncomfortable. You could ride. Put me on a mule. I could ride a mule. What's the big deal? I mean, none of this matters for anything. But the nation and the entire West is wrapped up in this consumption. Show off, more, 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 more. Where does it end? I don't know. I don't know where it ends. I think I know where this ends. I think I know how it ends, too. But since I don't want to bum you out, I won't. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls right now. Frank, W-O-R, go ahead, please.
Mike Savage, McCain, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. What other course can this guy get? We've become a bilingual country. You want information on the phone, speak Spanish or speak English. You want to go to a bank and deposit money, speak Spanish, speak English. I think this is fantastic. I think he's going to make it to the White House. He needs your support, Mike. Let's back him up.
Why?
Why? What's the alternative? Barack? Hillary? Is that the alternative? We got
to
go.
Why should I continue to support the best of bad choices? Why?
Because he's the least of the bad choices. That's why.
In other words, Bush, the worst president in the history of this republic, by everyone's estimation, the absolute worst president. You know, I speak to Republicans down here, very wealthy Republicans. They all say the same thing, that Bush is the worst president in American history. They shake their heads. Tell me how McCain is different than Bush.
Hello, Mike. Are we on the air?
Oh, get out of here. Take a walk. Okay, you hear someone's coaching him. He was listening to what to say next. I love when you talk and he didn't. I listen to him. I let him talk to you. Then I say a word, and right away already the hearing aid went off. Goes back to what my mother told me 30 years ago, God rest her soul. She said, you know, she used to laugh when she was young. She used to say to me, I don't think the old people really go deaf. She said, I think they hear what they want to hear. She used to say to me, as she got older, I think she heard what she wanted to hear. What? What'd you say? Huh? But when it came to the meatball and spaghetti, that she could hear. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I love L.A. Without it. I love L.A.
We are talking about the rubbish of the election, the Indiana-North Carolina primaries. We know the outcome. We are talking about the decadence of America. We are talking about, I don't know what, dogs and radio studios. I need a dog as a mascot to function. So right now I have the white cockapoo. Come here, honey. He sees me, hears me. So smart, these animals. After yesterday's story about the horse they killed on the track, where she was looking up saying, did I hurt you? Did I disappoint you? You know, she broke the legs because they ran her too young. And they ran her against boy horses. And they ran her on a hard track. And they whipped her. And then the girl's legs break out. So she was running with broken legs. She didn't want to displease her masters, so... Did I hurt you in some way? She looks up. Oh, no, you're okay, honey. And they give her the needle. They killed her faster than a mass murderer on death row. And I'm supposed to believe it had nothing to do with money. So that's why I have a dog here. I wouldn't treat a dog that way. Abilene, Texas. Derek, welcome. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Extreme honor to talk with you. Very supportive of you and keep you in my prayers. I just wanted to comment on your earlier observation about the behavior of young women today. And in my opinion, this is actually a spiritual deficit that is founded in the Bible. If you look in the book of Genesis, when God hands down the curse upon Adam and Eve, one of the things he tells Eve is that greatly will I increase the longing for your man, which is basically codependency. And so what you have is you have these women who have this deep longing for companionship, fed by this media image, which is if you look at Girls Gone Wild and you look at these act commercials where men put on this body spray and women are reduced to a sexual plaything, these women think in order to get a man, that's what they have to do. That's how they have to behave. They have to become commitment-free, child-free sexual playthings, not realizing that guys want their Girl Gone Wild, but that's not who they marry. That's
absolutely 100% right. That's absolutely right. The guys say, well, I'm enjoying myself, but I would never... You know, find a wife here.
Exactly,
know.
Yeah. And they don't realize.
I mean, the girls look like blow-up sex dolls in Larry Flint's store on Sunset Boulevard. They're indistinguishable from the blow-up dolls in the store there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's sad because they're basically manipulated by the media around them, which basically tells them this is what you got to do.
Well, there's a little bit more than the media around them. You know, there's another element to it, which I've touched on, which people won't accept, but I know it's true. The heterosexual youth has adopted the homosexual lifestyle unwittingly. They do not even understand that they've adopted the musical wombs lifestyle of of that other alternative reality, the commitment-free, have as many partners as you want, decadent, drunk music, loud music, etc. Spend it on things. It's exactly what that community has been all about forever. And the younger heteros basically are following that lifestyle.
And it's all
that's my viewpoint. I guess it's illegal to say that, but I'm just that kind of guy. I guess I'll tell you what I think. Thanks for the call. Could you play for me Beach Boys, something Beach Boys, or the other one you have, Surf City, anything like that? No one wants to hear my philosophy. They want to listen to the Brit
Union.
Is this Surf City?
Good
vibration. From good vibration. I can't finish that. I was going to say something that I shouldn't say on the air. It's like a takeoff on From Good Vibrations to Good Vibe. But I can't finish this statement because it would be seen as off color for a family show. From Good Vibrations to Good Vibe. You fill in the term yourself. I just want to hear this piece. That's all. Oh, God. I started off with a vodka. Then I had another. Now you're waiting. Turn it off already. You're waiting in a restaurant for everyone to show up. What am I going to do, sit there and stare at the walls? So I had another drink. The wine didn't show up yet. Then the champagne shows up. Now, I never mix alcohol, but I did. You have to. You're at a little birthday party. And then before long, you know, the thing is over and the birthday cake comes out. I don't eat cake. I don't eat sweets. I don't eat dessert. It's why I'm still walking the earth. All my life I found out years ago that the sugar disease is the number one killer of mankind. But you're at a birthday party. You have to taste the cake, don't you? So it was so good, it was utterly unbelievable, and I knew I made the mistake. It was like the suicide pill. When you mix a cake after alcohol, forget about it. But so the results are coming in. Clinton 0.0%, Obama 0.0% in North Carolina, and right now in Indiana we got Clinton at 0.0% and Obama at 0.0%. The endless election. Why do you think the establishment is throwing an endless election in your face? Answer, so they could sack the Treasury without you paying attention, idiot. Don't you get it? The war has bankrupted the country. Can't you figure it out?
Savage.
Well, East Coast girls are hit by really dig those styles they wear. And the Southern girls with the way they talk, they knock me out when I'm
down. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Little Beach Boys to get the segment rolling. That was fun when this first came out, you know. Well, this country's become very cynical since then. Everything is harder, meaner. You know, it's like to live and die in L.A. is basically the theme of the country. Whatever you do for a living. I want to hear this falsetto, and then I'll go on. I'll suffer with the primaries. I will suffer in the primaries. No, thanks. I don't wish they could all be California girls. Thank you. Let's stop there. This is not a nightclub act. I got to cut off some of the best lines that I'm about to do, particularly when I get cynical. My lines are really good, but I can't use them. It's totally illegal. 0% reporting, and yet there's a report. How could Indiana have 0% precincts reporting, but there's already a report? Clinton 63%, Obama 37%. Look, she's going to win there because it's more like America than North Carolina, which is a skewed state. You want me to level with you? I mean, you know what it's all about, don't you? It's a racial thing. I mean, I can't say that. The other schmendricks in the media aren't going to say it because they're afraid. But everyone wants the truth. They don't know where to get it. The reason Obama's going to win in North Carolina is because it is what it is. And the people are voting along racial lines in North Carolina, period. Now you go to Indiana, you got a more diverse community than you do in North Carolina. And she wins there. That's more or less like America. Now, the media would have you believe that America's more like North Carolina, which is, you know, absolutely rubbish. And in the background there is John McCain speaking in hieroglyphics. Okay, let's go to the callers. No more women, men things, please. I don't want to hear about women want real men. I don't care what they want. Let me give you a basic rule in life. You don't know what the other person wants, and you can't control them, and don't try to. Let them live and be well. That's all. Jackie, W-O-R, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. This is Jackie. I'm an Orthodox Jew from Brooklyn, New York.
How you doing tonight?
Please talk.
Yeah, I wanted to just tell you that, you know, I went to a class with my rabbi, and we were talking about gays and lesbians. And, you know, I'm 58 years old, and I've been from Brooklyn all my life. I it's just insane what's going on in this world. What are we going to do about this? There's no more life anymore.
What are we going to do about it? They run the country. What do you mean, what are we going to do about it? You have no control over the politicians. I don't have any control over them. But the politicians answer to that community because they've got a lot of money to spend and they throw their weight around. Do I have to tell you that?
Right now, but they're so animalistic and they're ruining the
world. We can't look. We know what you think. We know what I think, but we don't have to like explain it. The proof is in the pudding. Look at how the young people are behaving. They're aping that lifestyle. Multiple partners, no commitment. Et cetera. You know, that's what it comes down to. In other words, decadence, dancing around the flame. And of course, the media goes along with it because you know who's in the media, by and large. They glorify their own lifestyle. No, they're going to glorify a Christian or a Jewish lifestyle.
That's crazy.
What can I say? That's why get upset over about it? What am I going to do about it? I'd rather just play music today and become a disc jockey. Since they say that I'm just a shock jock, why don't I just become a shock jock today? Why don't I just play music and shock them? Maybe I'll do that one day. I love how they try to dismiss me. No one ever heard of these people in the media. They publish a book. Nobody reads it. They compare themselves to people like me. I write 4 bestsellers in a row after 22 other books. Genuine accomplishments, and they try to dismiss me as a shock jock to their own detriment, by the way. What do you want to talk about? Forget about me. Let's talk about dogs, dead horses. They shoot horses, don't they? Ugh, what a terrible story that is. I was the only one in the radio business to touch it and to explain to you what went on there. And I don't know. It's sad that the country has such bad people in the media that they won't even talk about an execution of a poor horse on a track for what it was. It is unbelievable to me. So what are we going to do? A montage now of John McCain? Here's John McCain talking about the Constitution while campaigning in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Play any of those to show you how bored I am. Hello?
The framers of our Constitution had a knack for coming right to the point. And it shows in the 35-word oath that ends with a pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution itself.
You know, you're full of malarkey.
This is what we require.
Turn it off. You're full of malarkey. You try to bust our borders worse than they're already busted. So stop the malarkey. You had some idiot write the speech for you about the framers and protect the Constitution. I'm protecting the borders. Don't give me that malarkey the next day. Here, borders, language, culture. The next day he goes and speaks to La Raza in Spanish. How can you believe a word any of these people say? It's unbelievable to me. I know many of you want, get behind the mic. Hey, the best choice we have. Get behind the mic. No, let him get behind you, Mike. Let him get behind this mic. Then maybe Mike will get behind him. How's that? Does that work for you? It's not bad. The DNA is still flowing. I mean, the fungus, the DNA that I was given still works. Let me put it to you that way. Let him get behind you, and then maybe I'll have Mike get behind him. Or let him get behind this Mike, and then maybe this Mike will get behind him. You want to play couplets today? We can play word games. Chinese like that. They're very intelligent. A few cultures on Earth love to play with words. They're the most intelligent people on the planet. The Chinese are right up at the top of the list. You get to know Chinese people, they love to play word games with words. Our country, they don't play word games. They don't even know how to do it. They get insulted if you try to play word games. They think you're a wise guy or insulting them. Everything has to be in two dimensions and, you know, didactic. Hackneyed, didactic, two-dimensional statements. Anything else need not apply. 50,000 dead now, a minimum. You know, it's a dictatorship. So yesterday it was 4,000. By the end of the day, it was 10,000. By midnight, it was 12,000. Now 50,000 fear dead. They're making it up as they go along. Why? Because they're dictators. There's no free press there. So they figure the more they say that they're dead, the more schmucks will send the money. The more schmucks, they'll start in with the balloons and the candy and raising money now for Myanmar like it's their problem. And none of the money will get to the people. It'll all go to the dictators who spend the money in Paris on prostitutes and Dom Perignon and buy more weapons to suppress the people more. Jessica. Line 5, WOR, KNEW, welcome to the show. You're in San Francisco. What's on your mind?
My call. So 2 points. Number one, I am a stay-at-home mom, and I've got a beautiful daughter, and I actually have a lot of friends with kids now. 50% of them stay home, and 50% of them work full-time. And, you know,
isn't that illegal in California to actually be heterosexual and stay home and raise children? Doesn't that encroach upon the monopoly of the state educational system?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's, you know, the big thing. I have a toddler. I have a lot of friends with toddlers, and they're wondering, can I actually educate my child at home?
Oh, no, you can't. It's illegal in Schwarzenegger's California. You have to send it to a state rookery, which is run by the mean-faced, clipped-haired brigade, so they can brainwash your daughter so she becomes another sex toy by the time she's 18. God forbid she should want to be a mother.
Gosh, well, you know, I tell you that's a challenge, but really my second point was just that it's the media. You never hear anything positive, let alone mothers. Whenever I watch, there's a show about, well, it's View from the Bay, but anyway, whenever I see that, they're talking about moms who can do everything, and they can work 40 hours a week, and they can come home and go to soccer, and, oh, it's just too much.
Yes, the motherhood was glorified when I was young in the media. Fatherhood was glorified when I was young by the media. There is no glorification of parenthood, motherhood, or fatherhood in the media. There's no question about it, but we know this. What's the point? You're going to talk to the few power-mad people who run the media? The men who own newspapers, television shows, cable shows, book companies, et cetera. They own everything. There's a few men who now control everything that you see and hear. They are the equivalent of a state monopoly. I keep repeating this. It's totally illegal. It's against the interests of the American people. Media accumulation, media conglomeration is totally wrong. It's anti-American. It's unconstitutional. It's monopolistic. Well, what power do I have? Under George Bush, all rules were broken. Virtually every rule that was in place to protect the people was thrown out the window. I'll give you an example on Wall Street. There was an act that was put in place after 1929, after the stock market crash, that required a significant amount of money to be put down before you could buy stocks. I think it was called the Glass-Steagall Act. I'm not an expert on the exact wording, but I know very, very much what happened under George Bush. This act was in place to make sure we never had another 1929. In other words, to eliminate or minimize, excuse me, speculation. And so they said, you want to buy stocks? You can't buy them on margin. What does buying on margin mean? It means what you're doing now with nothing down. In other words, no fundamentals are attached. Bush comes along. The power-hungry madmen get their way. This act is thrown out. Consequently, we have the meltdown of our economy. Because they threw the act out somewhere in the, I think, 201, 202, 203, because that act was thrown out, suddenly new fiduciary instruments were introduced, which were even more speculative than the average stock being bought with nothing down. And consequently, we have groups such as Bear Stearns being gobbled up and thrown out. And we have the pirates of Wall Street breaking the economy. Why? Because George Bush deregulated any controls over the stock market. He deregulated the mortgage market. He has deregulated everything to the point of no return. I'll be right. No, I shouldn't say. That's usually a good off the wall. I'll be right back. Too early. Too early, that's all. What's this, Jan and Dean? Dean Torrance, San Diego. Welcome to the Savage Nation, Dean.
Howdy, Michael. How are you?
What's on your mind, my friend?
I'm supposed to say that. I've been listening for years. I should know that better. And I'm not actually from San Diego. I'm actually from Huntington Beach, which is Surf City, by the way.
Are you actually a Dean from Jan and Dean?
Yes, sir, I am. And I heard you ask for the record Surf City, and I noticed somebody played a Beach Boys song.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. Where is the Surf City song by Jan and Dean Beowulf? I thought that's what we got. The guy's right. That's your song, Dean? That was your song?
That was my song.
So let me ask you, Dean, what do you think of life? You were at the top of the heap in your earlier days. You watched the world go around and around. Now here we are together. What do you see happening?
Well, you know, I live in Orange County, so I'm kind of behind the orange curtain here. So
I love that one. You know, that's very funny.
We're very conservative here, and I'm loving life. It's been great.
But do you? I won't ask you about the election. It'll be one man's, you know, view of that. But I'm talking about the decadence that I see in Hollywood. Was it this bad 30, 40 years ago?
Oh, heck yes.
Yeah, it was. So nothing's changed. It's the same thing.
It hasn't. But, you know, we were full-time college students, so we really didn't hang out with those people. So I knew of them, but I didn't really
Yeah, but you go back even to like the 30s, 40s, that movie Sunset Boulevard, which is an incredibly great movie. It was decadence on a different scale and a different note than what I see today. You know, it was a totally different kind of decadence, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And we obviously recognized it as such, and that's why we didn't ever go on tour. We made records.
Oh, isn't that interesting? You chose not to go on tour.
Oh, heck yeah.
That's how I became a raconteur, because I won't go on tour.
it's very
I hate going on tour. I don't like traveling, so I know what they do to people. I mean, they rip your guts out, and you're tempted by booze, drugs, rampant sexuality and whatever, and there's no stability on the road. Consequently, it'll rip an artist to shreds.
Well, we never, as I said, we never toured. We would go out maybe for weekends, and that was about it, and then back to school on Monday.
So now it's you and the Lawn Clippers in Orange County.
And I love it.
Thank you, man. I'm very proud that you listened to the Savage Nation. That was Mr. Dean of Jan and Dean, who, of course, did Surf City. Play Surf City one more second so we know. So we don't mix it up. He's like, he vies with the Beach Boys, like me and the Leprechaun. Like Savage and the Leprechaun, don't want to be confused. This was a great song when I was a kid. What year was this song, baby? 58, 7? No one knows. Turn it on. It's over. I mean, if you're a working class kid, as I was in Queens, go to school, work, all you did was dream of California. It was like another universe. It may as well have been on another planet. I remember when Groucho Marx had a show called You Bet Your Life. So when he would have people on, where are you from? And they would say, like, Burbank. It had magic to me. Like, oh, Burbank. Where are you from? We're from Ventura. At the Magic Froggy Frog. So all of those words, they were all significantly, astonishingly attractive to a kid from Queens, New York. But what is it at the end of the day? It's you on the other side of America. And today, really, we've all become, homogenized. We've been put into the big blender of decadence. Some fight it, some don't fight it, some fall into the well and never come back out, and they think they're swimming. They're swimming in the sewer, and they think they're swimming in the perfume. They don't even know the difference anymore. Surf City, 1963, that was a good year. Let's see, what happened in 1963? I have no idea. I don't know why it was a good year, other than I was younger. And it wasn't a good year. There never were really good old days when you think about it. If you look back in your life, oh, those are the good old days. Were they really good? You were just younger. You think they were good. The fact of the matter is everything was the same in some ways, and in some ways things change and things remain the same. Well, here's the latest thing. 2%, two precincts are in, and Clinton's maintaining her 60-40 lead over Obama. And North Carolina hasn't closed yet, so we have 0-0 versus 0-0. You know the results already. Indiana, which is more like America, Clinton wins. North Carolina, which is less like America and not as ethnically diverse, is going to be for Obama. That tells you how the general election will go as well, boys and girls. And the reason I give you the plot line is so that we don't fool ourselves into believing that we don't know how this ends up. The fact of the matter is, America is not North Carolina. America is not New Hampshire. America is not a lot of places. America is many places. I'll be right back.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
A great song, Jan and Dean. Savage Nation.
But parked in a rickety old garage.
The hour's flying. Give me the results of the primary. I can't wait. Every second, another election, another primary, another state. There's Reverend Wright, man. At least he put some life into this thing with his hate. Now it's boring again. I can't. Thank you, Jan. I appreciate that very much. The dog is in here. Well, thank God I got this cockapoo in here with me. I feel much better with a dog in the studio than I do with a person. It's like the movable dog. If it was not for this dog, I wouldn't have gotten a poodle at all. I had no idea the breed was so wonderful. Say cocker spaniel, poodle, cockapoo. Never heard of it years ago when it first came around. Now, so I get a poodle. I call him a poo-poo for a number of reasons. I call him a love-a-doodle. I've given him 100 different names. Every day I give my dog another name, another breed name. Love-a-doodle. Whatever. Look, I love dogs. But I got to tell you, I don't know who fed this dog the Mexican leftovers. My God, it's a small studio without a fan. I'm gagging in here. It's like San Quentin. It feels like the chamber in here. I have no choice. I'm in a small radio studio. The dog comes in. He must have gone through the leftovers. I don't know how to explain it any other way. They could have put an exhaust fan in this joint. I can't wait for the break. I'm liable to keel over in this place. Cash, have a heart, man. Stop eating those beans. Cut it out. He went through the garbage. How do I know? They think they're doing you a favor, dog. Houston, Texas. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I had a question for you about, I have a four-year-old that his teachers at daycare said that, you know, he stutters. And it's not doesn't seem, you know, very severe to me, but they're suggesting a speech pathologist. And I seem to recall that you had commented about stuttering as a child yourself or having some experience with it and just wanted to get your advice.
No, it's a serious question. No, I never had that affliction. However, I think a speech pathologist would be a very good idea because if it's a mild problem, I'm sure that it's always related to anxiety and that with a little encouragement and coaching, your child will grow through it like a childhood illness. I'm pretty sure of that just listening to what you're saying.
Right.
I would go with the advice of a speech pathologist. There's nothing wrong with it, no shame in it. And, you know, just check out who they are and see if they're legitimate, see what their track record is. As I would do, okay, who have you treated? How do you treat them? What is your therapy? What's your theory? How do you do it? Blah, blah, blah. Because you don't want to make the child even more anxious, you know, obviously. Thank you for the call. So here we are. We're watching the results. They're in exactly what it was predicted to be. Obama wins in North Carolina. Hillary wins in Indiana. It looks like it's going that way. But they're going to keep it up every second on the cable channels. Every second they're going to tell you like they don't know the results. How else are you going to listen? It's been running 60-40 in Indiana since they opened up. And that's it. That's the story. It's on and on and on. It's the way to sell advertising, the way to sell soap.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language. Adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Woody, this is a family show. What'd you put this on for? It is the Savage Nation. We're watching the charade called the primaries being run by the madman who runs the cable business, making you think that it really is important. And all right, so Indiana's, the polls are closing a few percent, 60-40 for Hillary against Obama. And North Carolina, probably Obama is going to win. Because you know why, that's all. That's it. What do you want to know? What else do you want to know? And the other side, we have Doofus speaking in Spanish to La Raza. And you're supposed to get excited for old Doofus because he's an R. Are you kidding me? You must be joking. Here, play Doofus. Play Doofus for me. Play
for the
Doofus.
Chief executive or any other constitutional officer, the duties and boundaries of the Constitution are not just a set of helpful suggestions. They're not just guidelines to be observed when it's convenient and loosely interpreted when it isn't. The clear powers defined by our Constitution.
Turn them off. What rubbish. You try to wreck our borders already for worse than they were. You're speaking in Spanish to a special interest group. There goes number two of my trilogy, Borders, Language, Culture. So what are you telling us? You yourself are violating the Constitution both in principle and in every other way. What are you talking about? Why don't you just go to Mexico and give a speech? So we the people are bewildered. We the real people, as opposed to we the media people. You know, the people that the media want you to believe represents America. But if you want to talk about that, go ahead. If you want to talk about the dog race, the ponies, whatever you want to talk about, the topics I raised, go ahead, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com has all the stories that we haven't talked about. Here's a story from my website linked up from the Washington Times that I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch of. It says, scrapped vessels haunt Coast Guard. You think that the contracting debacle in Iraq is bad, and you're right, it's horrible. It's as bad as it ever was, even under the Romanovs. In Russia, I don't think it was as bad as what it is proportionate to what's going on today. What corrupt contractors did to Russia before it collapsed and became the Soviet Union is what's going on in this country today by corrupt contractors. I'm surprised they haven't poisoned the food for the troops yet to make an extra dollar. In those days, they sold grain that was old to the troops, the Russian troops, in the Crimean battle. They sold wheat that went bad, and they said, let them eat bad wheat. I made the money on the money. Okay? We haven't gone there yet, but here's one that's close to selling them bad wheat. Scrapped vessels haunt Coast Guard. Eight ships that were supposed to be the government's latest best weapon for stopping terrorists, illegal immigrants, and smugglers now float unused in a Coast Guard shipyard in Baltimore, the symbol of a nearly $100 million taxpayer debacle. Instead of patrolling, the Coast Guard ships were deemed unfit for the high seas after just a couple of months of use, and eventually the ships will be dismantled without ever fulfilling their promise. Do you hear this? Could you believe this? And no one's gone to jail. Nobody has been found accountable. Not one contractor has been taken out and said, we're going to take all the money back from you no matter where you hit it. Nothing. They hire out these older Coast Guard vessels to some contracting group, and they tell them that they want 13-foot ramps attached to the backs of the 110-foot cutters to allow small boats to launch into the water quickly to chase suspicious watercraft. So what happens? The contractor does such a bad job that the new 123-foot Coast Guard cutters develop cracks in their hulls after the upgrades. Cracks developed in the hulls because of the work that was done by this contractor. Now, I can go on and on. You can read it on MichaelSavage.com. As I say, we linked it up from the Washington Times. So this has been going on for a couple of years now. As you well know, even when whistleblowers find this stuff and try to report it, they're basically hushed up. For example, in several reports, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, criticized oversight of the construction process, okay, years ago, and said the Coast Guard had to maintain more decision-making authority, but they didn't. They turned over the decision-making authority to an outside contracting group. So they've been talking about this now for 4 years under the Bush administration. And as I say, no one has gone to prison. No one has been fined. And you, the taxpayer, and I, the taxpayer, are going to see $100 million in repairs made or upgrades made to our Coast Guard ships totally going up in smoke, burnt like, I have no more words for this. That's why I don't want to do the news. It's too depressing. This is the most inept and corrupt administration in the history of the United States of America. The only question that remains is, can we survive it? This is the only question. Put that on the website. Put that on every website in America, the man who's unquoted, Michael Savage. They quote everybody else who make mild comments about nothing. Savage says this is the most corrupt, incompetent administration in American history, and the only question that remains is, can this country survive it? Put that up on various reports on the website. I doubt that you'll see that. But you heard it. Houston, Texas, Warren, your opinion, please. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. With all of the debauchery going on in the United States of America today, what similarities can you draw between what's going on now and Germany pre-Hitler?
All right, I've made the comparison for 10 years, but fortunately, there are several distinct elements that are not have no parallel in the Weimar Republic. The Weimar Republic was a very decadent time in Germany. It was post-World War I, as you mentioned, and it led to Adolf Hitler because the people wanted change. I'm using that in a very sarcastic way. The people were desperate for change, and they even went to the maniac Hitler for that change. Hitler promised a stability, a return to order, and Germany for the German people. He also said that he would fix the economy. It sounds very similar, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. The differences are many. One, in Germany at that time in the Weimar Republic, the inflation had reached such a point that people had to take a wheelbarrow filled with German marks, paper currency, to buy even a loaf of bread. That's how valueless the paper currency had become. Now, admittedly, we have inflation in this country right now, and admittedly, food costs have gone up, but certainly we're not there, and I pray we never get there. That would be the number one thing. And I always will tell you, I will tell you this, rather, I've studied revolutions for well over 30 years, and I've known this since I'm a teenager when I first started becoming interested in what caused revolutions in various countries. The people generally will not revolt if they're fat and happy. And consequently, since they're able to get cheap carbohydrates still rather inexpensively, and they're happy because they watch the rubbish that television produces for them, there's no chance of any kind of uprising in this country, fortunately, because I'm not one who believes revolution is ever good for a country when it's a situation like this in particular. I mean, we're nowhere near needing something of that order. And number two, there were other many differentials between the Weimar Republic and the United States of America today. However, with regard to the issue of decadence, we are on a scale of, let's say, 1 to 100 at approximately 95 compared to, let's say, 40. The Weimar Republic, let's say the era of the Blue Angel, that kind of thing, and the art and the this and the that, was nothing compared to the generation of pornography into everyone's brain and home. There was nothing like that in those days. There was no television. So, in other words, the pornography was not injected into the homes of everyone in Germany. Today, pornography has penetrated every corner of the United States of America because of the internet. So we are far worse in terms of decadence than Weimar Germany was. Does that answer your question anyway, Warren?
Yes, sir, I believe it does, and I really do appreciate everything you do. And it's funny, I get home from work and I turn on the radio and listen. I don't even watch TV. I feel like my grandparents' generation listened to the radio at night, and that's comforting.
No, it's very touching, and I know you mean it, and I'm a cynical guy, but at certain points I drop my cynicism for a call just as this. I hear you. Many people are very concerned about this country. They're good people. They're religious people, the kind of people that you never see here. You know, we hear no religious people. We see no religious people. We don't want to know about them because we can't make any money with them. Why would the media want to ever hear from a religious person? You don't buy the garbage they sell. You don't watch their movies. So what good are you to them? Do you realize that? So in other words, that's what I'm saying to you. I hear no evil. I see no evil. Well, they've reversed it. I hear no religious people. I see no religious people in the media. So they turn to a show like this, praying to God they can get a semblance of some reality that reflects their reality and maybe a little more detail. I'm fortunate that I'm a little older and I've had a lot of time to read and study and think, and most people have not had my opportunities, or let's say the opportunities I made for myself, okay? It is now approximately 16 minutes after the hour. Again, if we're looking at the primary, sure, it's a primary day, but I don't think the outcomes of Indiana are... The outcome in Indiana is doubted at all. Hillary's going to win. And I don't think the outcome in North Carolina is doubted at all. Obama's going to win. And, of course, the media is trying to make it sound like it's unknown and hanging by a cliff so they can keep selling you the ads during the break. You know, I understand how the business works, and they have an opportunity to hang you by your own petard of curiosity. I understand how that works, believe me. And if you want to hear some of the other stories, I'm going to recommend, again, my website. It's not to have every other great story in the world, but we collect some of the very good ones. For example, yesterday was a big horse racing day because of the murder, the execution of that beautiful horse, Eight Bells on the Track. Horse racing gets a whipping. Eight Bells trainer defends jockey. And on the right side, you see that we Americans are getting a whipping because it says McCain to attend convention of Reconquista Group. That's right. He launched his own campaign, Spanish-language website, which unto itself doesn't bother me. But when he goes and gives a speech before La Raza, I know that it's all over. Because although La Raza bills itself as a civil rights organization, the name La Raza literally means the race. Now, I want to ask you something. What if a white man created a group called The Race? Tell me how long that would last. And tell me if John McCain would come to speak to a white group called The Race. I kind of doubt it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the government media complex that we face here every day in the Savage Nation and try to face down. It's a big job. Someone's got to do it, but some of the newspapers out there still produce great stories. Washington Times, scrapped Coast Guard vessels, $100 million taxpayer debacle. Not one contractor who did this has been arrested. Not $1 return. Here's another article from the other side of the spectrum, Washington Post. Fed up and going after illegals. A sheriff said, we cannot continue to absorb this population or we will end up in collapse like a third world country. That's going on in the Washington, D.C. area. Of course, the liberals call them race baiters. Those who love America are called fringe people, race baiters. Only those who want to see their country go up in smoke and become an appendage, for example, of Mexico without its own borders, without its own language, without its own culture, are glorified by the vermin in the media who are internationalists because that's how they see us, is just another market. But those of us who are nationalists see the world quite a different way, and we'll continue to fight you. We'll fight you internationalists every step of the way. You're not simply going to make this country go away. We'll make you go away first. I can guarantee you if you keep this up, we'll make you go away before you make us go away. So keep it up. Keep calling us names like race baiters. Keep trying to marginalize those of us who love this country. Keep trying to tell those of us who believe in borders, language, and culture that we are ignorant savages. And you make yourself into the great internationalist, humanitarian, intellectual geniuses and see where you end up. I can guarantee you I know where it ends up. You end up on the ash heap of history, not us. I can guarantee you I know which way the wind blows. Take a look at England. Take a look at England. They thought that they had that country knocked up and finished. Those liberal vermin thought that they had England knocked up and finished. They knocked the Union Jack off the tails of the British Airways jets 10 years ago. They put in that moron, Tony Blair, the third way. Like Bill Clinton, the third way. You know what the third way is? This way to the egress. That's what the third way was. The dissolution of everything English. They woke up and they were living in Londonistan. Crime was out of control. And let me tell you something. The same trend is going on in this country. The only problem is the government media complex will not let you know what you feel and what you know to be true. You do not want the illegal aliens flooding this country. They know that. But they will deceive you by throwing mud in your eyes, by telling you you're a racist, and groups like La Raza, which are clearly brown supremacist groups. There's no other explanation for it. I'm against individual races having supremacist groups. I don't care what the race is. But what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you oppose white supremacist groups as being un-American, I agree with you. But then by the same token, you should oppose a brown supremacist group, which is La Raza. It stands for only one race and one race only. Go tell that to John McCain. He should know that, but he doesn't know that. That's why I do what I do every day. I said this to a very powerful gentleman the other day. I was meeting with him on certain issues. He's been a lifetime supporter of Republican things in a big way. And I said to him, I could have retired a number of years ago. I don't really need to do this. And I'm not a greedy person. I said, I do it because I fear for my country. I fear for my children. He just nodded his head. He understands what liberty is, and he understands that we're losing our liberty. He understands how it works, and so do I, and so do you. And that's why this show survives. Despite all odds, despite every obstacle thrown in the way of the Savage Nation, we are still here. We're thriving. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We go to Mississippi. Tiffany, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. When you were speaking on this whole decadence issue, you said something, you touched on something that struck me close to home. I would like for you to elaborate a little bit on your views on pornography in the family and in the homes and what it's doing to our marriages and our nuclear families.
It used to be illegal in my day. Pornography was illegal. If it existed at all, it was in seedy, garbage parts of town. And that was even after it was illegal altogether. Now, it's not only illegal, it's more legal than talking about a nation like America. What I say is considered more pornographic than the most violent images you could ever imagine, pumped into your home by AT&T cable, pumped into your home by internet providers, which make themselves look like great Americans. They're all pornographers. Do you know that? The biggest pornographer today is not Harry's House of Latex on I-95. It's your cable company.
Savage.
Well, Meatloaf Jr. on Fox News, Meatloaf Thrower Jr., Chris Walachinsky, is telling us what we already knew was going to be true before the day began, which is that Obama won in North Carolina. That's what Meatloaf Jr. is telling us, speaking to Karl Rove, another trusted source, as you well know. I don't understand this anymore. I don't understand why anyone will watch this rubbish. Who cares? We know how this was going to work out. Why did Obama win in North Carolina? Question. One, because he's a sterling character who cured polio, and he will be a great leader. Two, because only he can change America for the better, and the people know it. Or three, because he is of part African-American descent, and there are a large number of people of the same racial configuration and such in the state, and people are voting along those lines. Take your choice. Why is Hillary going to win in Indiana? Because none of the above is true in the first series of questions, and because Indiana represents or looks more like mainstream America than does the other states. And so there it is. What else do you want to know? The problem is, on the other side, we just don't know what to do. Karl Rove called Bush's guru. That's a real recommendation. You hear? And the guy got a job on Fox News. Bush's guru. So if you love what George Bush has done for America, then you're going to really love his analysis and opinions. That's all I can say. You know you're going to get the best imaginable advice from the man who brought us to where we are today. That would be like turning to Donald Rumsfeld for advice on military affairs. In other words, if he becomes a what if they hired Donald Rumsfeld next on Fox News as a military advisor? Say, and they say he was former defense secretary under George Bush, who devised a policy where the U.S. Marines wind up having been court-martialed because of his rules of engagement. That would be another great one. That's why I was reading a book on the decline of Russia before the Russian Revolution on the Romanovs. The incompetence and corruption and insanity that existed in the Romanov dynasty just before it collapsed was astonishing in terms of its apparency. And you say, well, it can't happen here. I don't know if we don't have the equivalent of a dynasty here. 8 years Clinton. Now 7 years Bush, Clinton, Bush, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton. 16 years, man, and look where we are. Is this country a better place than it was before Bill Clinton was put into office by the communist Chinese? I want to ask you, those of you who remember Chinagate, an obscure politician from Arkansas who was out of money, who was rescued by money from China, then suddenly became the president for 8 years. He had very, very questionable donors like Bernard Schwartz of Loral Technology, who took technology for launching satellites that was developed by the U.S. Defense Department and used this technology to launch satellites from China because it was cheaper. That technology that was used in China by Bernard Schwartz, donor to the DNC under Bill Clinton, was then stolen or leaked to the communist Chinese military, who prior to Schwartz's arrival in China could not launch a rocket without it crashing on the launch pad. But after Schwartzy wound up in China under Bill Clinton in order to make a quick buck, he wouldn't launch them here with Hughes spacecraft. After all, we had an American company called Hughes spacecraft, or Hughes Space and Technology, that was launching rockets to put up satellites for phones and whatever. But Schwartz wanted to cut through the chase, so he used military technology that he acquired, went to China, launched the rockets from China where it was cheaper. He outsourced, in other words, the launching of satellites. And then, as I say, the rocket technology was stolen by the communist Chinese. And now, of course, we are facing annihilation from the Chinese. Now, he never paid for any of this. There was a big investigation, but apparently nothing ever came of it. Now, here we are. Here we are. Here we are. Now, is this country better off than it was before 1992? Of course it isn't. What have we had since 1992? Clinton, Bush. Now you want what? You had Clinton, Bush, now you want Clinton again? That's terrific. Then maybe you can have Jeb Bush after 8 years of Hillary Clinton. That would even be better. At which point, you could just take the American flag and burn it. Tucson, Arizona. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I wanted to know your thoughts on this, the reports that Obama's receiving like 98, 99% of the black vote in North Carolina.
Well, it's 91% of North Carolina blacks have voted for Obama. What's unusual about that? They're voting along racial lines.
Well, it's, yeah, that's, to me, it's a stunner because, you know, I mean, if the whites were to do that, it would look as it's racial, you know, racial problems.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a free country. When you get in the voting booth, you can do what you want. And number two, who would have expected otherwise in North Carolina? That's why I say the outcome today was pretty much to be predicted. It's just that the cable channels are making it into some suspenseful nonsense. There is no suspense. I mean, I knew that Obama would win in North Carolina because of the racial divide. And I knew that Hillary would win in Indiana because it was a more of a Midwestern state with a more diverse population, to be honest with you. That's all, it's as simple as that. I don't know what's so complicated. This is not nuclear physics. I don't understand what's so difficult here. This is not the engineering of the Golden Gate Bridge. This is not dealing with retroviruses. This is just simply cut and dried politics, the stuff that cable news is made of. So that's the whole story. That's why I'd rather talk about other things. I mean, let's go on. Let's see another story on michaelsavage.com. Killer ravens slaughtering newborn lambs. Okay, we'll leave that go. Well, you misinterpret that one. Pregnant cop's request for light duty denied. That's an interesting story. Did you hear this story? This is a great story, you know. This is just really right up my alley, so I may as well tell you what the story is. Pregnant cop denied bid to get office duty. Ocean Township, New Jersey. A decorated township police officer who learned last week that she is more than 2 months pregnant has been denied her request to go on light duty despite a recommendation from a doctor. Patrol woman Sonia Enrique made the request to Police Chief Antonio V. Amodillo, Jr. She said she was concerned about putting her unborn child at risk while on patrol duty. Well, that's very interesting. Very interesting question. Should she be given special duty? Why should she be given special duty? Why'd she become a cop if she wanted to get pregnant? And if she wanted to get pregnant, what is she, another accommodation? What is she looking for here? It's an interesting question. Amadio said all available meaningful positions in the department require some level of blah, 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 blah. So there's no maternity policy in the police department like there isn't in the military either, where many young women from very bad backgrounds go into the military and then get knocked up on the ships and basically use our U.S. Navy as a maternity ward, a floating maternity ward. And then you wonder why they can't fire a shot at a rubber boat in the Straits of Hormuz. They're too busy inspecting the rules of engagement on the Navy ships. We put out a flotilla into the Straits of Hormuz, and they probably spend 50% of their time seeing if they're in compliance with the ADA and maternity leave issues in the U.S. Navy. You know, in the Soviet Union, in the Navy, they used to, and in the whole military, they had KGB agents aboard every ship, for example. They were political appointees put on the, let's say a submarine goes out on a long tour. So they had a political officer. You know what his job was? To make certain that nobody violated the Communist Party doctrines on that ship. Now, if you tell me that we have not become the ex-Soviet Union, where we have compliance officers of the same type on our ships and in every aspect of the military and in our police departments, then you don't understand about anything about history. You understand what I'm saying to you, that we've become like the ex-Soviet Union in many, many regards, and it's very frightening to see that most of you don't even understand how that has happened. Just as they have become more like us, we've become more like them. They became more capitalistic, without much total freedom for the people. That's obvious. And we have become more and more socialistic, with less freedom for the people. Who predicted this? Aldous Huxley, 1950-52. What did he write? Aldous Huxley, as you know, wrote Brave New World. But Aldous Huxley wrote in those years that as East and West meet, they will become more alike each other. More like each other. It's eerily true. We're becoming each day more like a Soviet socialist republic in terms of what I've just told you. But again, that's too esoteric. You'd rather hear me talk about the dog eating the Mexican leftovers, I know, in the radio studio. It's funny. I understand that. Your brain is cooked at this time of the day. You'd rather laugh. You think I blame you? I'd rather laugh too, but I'm not in the mood to laugh. It's not a laughing matter. But you laugh, you want to laugh, go laugh. KNEW, San Francisco. Tom, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking the call, Mike. I just want to let you know, number one, what a great show you have, and it's anti-venom for me to listen to the show every day. I'm filled with venom, and this is the anti-venom for me personally.
Well, this is interesting. What do you mean by venom? Venom towards what?
Every day we're filled with venom out here, you know, this, that, just disgusting things happening in the media, everything. I listen to the show, and it brings some sanity to very chaotic.
Because I reflect your worldview. I understand that. You see the world more or less the way I do. But what made you call tonight?
Your comments about the pornography and the cable companies, I really think that the responsible parties are the people. We're the ones who, if we didn't want it, it wouldn't be there. The change needs to occur.
Well, you see, here's where I disagree with you. I know that argument, and that's the free market, and it's fallacious in this regard. The reason governments in the past made pornography illegal, in other words, there were whole vice departments and police departments. Of course people like pornography. Of course people like illicit drugs. Of course people like prostitution. That doesn't mean you should make it available to them. What you should do is make it unavailable to them and difficult to get because people have weaknesses. You don't exploit the weakness of people by putting a liquor store around an alcoholic, for example. Would you permit a drug dealer to work outside an Al-Anon? People who have a drug addiction trying to get cured, they go for a meeting. Would you let a drug dealer peddle drugs outside Al-Anon and say, well, it's the free market. It's up to the individual. It's a fallacious argument. People have weaknesses. What you do is you try to make sure their weaknesses are not exploited. So I disagree with you totally. Again, you see, this is the problem where we're getting deceived with this free market rubbish. A society that is good and wants good for its people imposes regulations that protect the people from themselves even, you know?
How did it creep into our society that way? How did it get there to where it's so readily available everywhere?
Say Larry Flint. Let's start with the devil who made this happen, in my opinion. I told you one man can be very powerful. Bill Clinton, for example, almost destroyed this country. He was like a Caligula. One evil emperor can destroy a whole nation. The Roman Empire, by the way, was not always evil. There were times that the Roman Empire was a great republic. And little by little, it started to become diluted. And then eventually they had one very evil emperor who destroyed the vestiges of the republic. And the Constitution was ripped up. The assembly of elected leaders was dissolved. Bill Clinton was our Caligula. And after him, almost many things started to unravel. Then came along George Bush. After Caligula came an emperor who was, let us say, not the brightest emperor that the country had ever seen. Let's say Bill Clinton was a brilliant but evil emperor. Now you have an emperor who is almost a clueless emperor who is given towards autocratic commands and an autocratic insulated presidency. And we have what we have today. And we go into where we are today. It's a big story. You know, the big story is it's not over yet. I've told you that. I spoke to a very pronouncedly knowledgeable man about finances the other day. And he said to me, and he'll remain anonymous, that people think that the crisis is over financially. He said it's just begun. He said that it's just begun. They have no idea how dangerous this is. And he said we are really on the verge of a 1929, and we don't know how this is going to end. He said the subprime mortgage crisis is just the tip of the iceberg. He said there are dozens of other crises in the financial pipeline that have not yet been seen. Now, he knows an awful lot, knows a lot more than I do about the economy. You're not going to read that in the newspapers, are you? The reason you won't read it is they want you to forget what was done to you by the people who did it to you. And believe me, it was done to you by government. It was done to you by the deregulation of the stock market primarily, by the elimination of that act I told you, I think of the Glass-Steagall Act. I don't know the exact, I'll find the exact name for you. It was in place from 1928 until the early 2000 period. Soon after Bush came to power, his cronies on Wall Street eliminated the safeguards that were put in place to prevent another crash. And here we are, my friends, 6 years later, on the verge again. Consequently, because of the exact same principles that brought about the stock market crash and the Great Depression, greed, greed, and more greed. It is 48 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. The one and only Savage Nation right here on your local station. Beowulf, are you there?
Savage.
Anyway, look up the Glass-Steagall Act, G-L-A-S-S, and Steagall, S-T-E-A-G-A-L-L. This was created after the stock market crash of 1929. It was called the Glass-Steagall Act. It was reactions of the U.S. government to cope with the economic problems which followed the stock market crash of 1929. Okay. Now they were repealed. The Glass-Steagall Act was fundamentally repealed in 1999. I was wrong about the year. It was repealed under the Bill Clinton reign of terror, and it was repealed as a result of lobbying. It was not in the best interests of the American people, but as you well know, money talks and the people walk. Now, what do I mean by lobbying? Who do I mean by lobbyists? When was this done? What you don't know is that the lobbying that led to the elimination of the Glass-Steagall Act was led by Roger Levy, L-E-V-Y, and he led the lobbying effect. The finance, insurance, and real estate industries together contributed more than $200 million for lobbying in 1998, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. And these industries succeeded in their 20-year effort to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act. And soon thereafter, almost immediately thereafter, the fly fishermen, Robert Rubin, who is a completely overrated man by anyone who knows Wall Street, Robert Rubin was hired right after the deal. In fact, the newly formed Citigroup announced only days after the deal that it had hired recently departed fly fisherman Robert Rubin as a member of its three-person office of the chairman. Some people said the Glass-Steagall Act protected bankers against themselves, but the main thing is it protected us from another stock market crash. But as a result of the greed of these corporations, the finance, insurance, and real estate industry corporations, they spent $200 million buying congressmen the way you buy you-know-what on the cheapest streets of America. And the congressmen said they were going to throw out the Glass-Steagall Act, which was created, as I said to you, to protect Americans from another depression. And here we are. Here we are. You want to know about the chickens coming home to roost? There it is. The chickens have come home to roost. And as I said to you, sure, we've seen some of the effects, but we haven't seen all of the effects of what's coming. And so although we got hit with a tsunami, Bush is now focusing us on Myanmar. You know it as another country, Burma, and we're sending more money there that they're printing in the basement of the Treasury Department. I guess the printing presses are running overnight to send more money to a country that we have no natural affinity for, to further create an inflationary cycle in the United States currency problem, in the United States currency. Instead of telling us that we ourselves have been hit by a tsunami, a financial tsunami, again, they're focusing us on Indiana, North Carolina, Reverend Wright, you name it. Anything but really what's really going on. And so we don't know how this ends up. I don't know how it ends up. It may turn out that we'll be rescued from a further depression by people who step in and don't, I don't know. I don't know what they have to do. I don't know if they have the power to stop it anymore. I do know this. I do know that if the Arab oil cartel decides to disconnect from the U.S. dollar, and concurrently if China decides to sell our T-bills, you will have to get a wheelbarrow to go to the grocery store with paper currency to buy a loaf of bread, and we will be living in the Weimar Republic. Let us pray that that does not happen. I know it's a nightmare scenario. What do you want me to do? Tell you about a dog eating Mexican food? I mean, I can do that. I can go, you know, one or the other. I'm a full-scale human being here with a long spectrum of keys on my keyboard. But this is where we're at. I'm going to watch this rubbish here out of North Carolina. I'm shocked. The blacks mainly voted for Obama. Like, you were surprised? That's a shocker? I mean, well, what's the shock there?
Savage. We'll be right back.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
I live in the most superficial city in America. Instead of being concerned with the real issues, there's page upon page about Maitre D's with Moxie. That's a featured story on Maitre D's with Moxie. In other words, to them, a cultural hero is someone who takes you to a table and carries a menu. They're braver than the U.S. Marines to the morons who run the newspaper. I have nothing against Maitre D's, by the way, but you don't feature them like they're better than any, they're like culture heroes already to the morons in this superficial slag heap called San Francisco social scene. So then the great moments from the front of the house saving the day in the San Francisco Comical. Maitre D's with Moxie. The scene, they name a restaurant I never heard of. The Maitre D's, someone I never heard of. The problem. A party of 14 was in the wine cellar for a private party. One of the guests who drank too much during the multi-course dinner passed out, hitting his head and losing his dinner all over the floor. Instead of saying puking on the floor, losing his dinner? What was it, in his pocket? Who wrote this garbage? What, they're too politically correct to say puke? The solution, another person in the party took the man to the hospital. The maitre d' moved the rest of the group upstairs for coffee and then went downstairs and cleaned up the mess himself. Now, here comes the heroism. It's not all glamour to be a maitre d', says the maitre d'. Sometimes you have to roll up your sleeves and do it because the restaurant is your home. The party host, terribly embarrassed, tipped big, and still come back as regulars. Woo, what a story. This is real Pulitzer material. Then they have a little article for the would-be social climbers who can't afford to go to a restaurant. How to be maitre d' at your own dinner party. You hear this one? This is a scream. This is just a scream. My idea of being a maitre d' at my own dinner party is to reheat something and watch the news and see what's going on in the world. Let's see what they advise in the social newspaper. God, I feel like it's 1870.
Well, we have an opera house that competes with some of your best back east. We have quite an opera house out here now.
So out of town, man.
Hospitality is an art, so practice it the next time you have a dinner party, they advise. These tips from the Bay Area's best major will make your guests feel comfortable.
What am I, their servant? What do you mean, make your guests feel comfortable? I'm not out to please them. Yeah, come and let them sing for their supper. What do you mean, make your guests feel comfortable?
To be a good maitre d', throw out the notion that someone is right and someone is wrong. See, non-judgmentalism, even with regard to this. Your guests are right, period. No arguments. No power struggles. Your job as host is to figure out how to make them happy. Let me look at some of the advice. Decide what...
Who writes this trash?
Decide what kind of experience you want your guests to have ahead of time. And think about how to provide that. Do you want them to be pampered the whole night?
What, do the morons have nothing to do but throw dinner parties for non-entities? I mean, if you have enough money to throw a dinner party, you have a professional do it. So you don't have to do it. If you don't have enough money, what are you putting on airs like you have enough money to throw a dinner party?
Create the ambience. Light candles. Ooh, that's hot. Hey, candles are really cool. Arrange some cozy seating clusters.
I can't even read this. This is like Crank Yankers.
Light candles. Arrange some cozy seating clusters.
This is like light candles, arrange some cozy seating clusters, and set out napkins. Wow, man, that's really sophisticated.
You put out napkins for your guests. That's really hot. Or other items guests might need while they nibble snack. Well, that's a real good tip. Don't think they'll wipe their fingers on your upholstery otherwise. Have the dinner table set and ready. That's a good tip. Your house should be tidy. No kidding. This is unbelievable. What's next? Gay greeter for the straight eater? That's the San Francisco newspaper's next idea of a newspaper article. Gay greeters for the straight eater. So you have to do it with Elon. The gay way to dining success. Your house should be tidy, but look a little lived in. So that when you open the door, people immediately feel comfortable. Welcome your guests as if they were family. Oh, boy. Now, here's the next one. Here they get tough now. Be in charge. Okay. Be specific. Big part of service is helping people make decisions. Oh, in other words, I'm supposed to be a servant to a bunch of people. Okay. Prepare a special treat. If you know guests like a particular kind of wine or a special dish, have it on hand. Then say something like this. I know you like my panna cotta, so I made some just for you. Do you know what panna cotta is or latte? If you don't know what those words are, you're considered like out of it. You don't know what a panna cotta is. Panna cotta is a piece of bread that's like as hard as a brick that they reheated for you. It's like terracotta made of wheat. Be sensitive to the flow of the party, they advise. If guests gather in the kitchen before dinner, even though you preferred them in the living room, that's assuming you have a living room and a kitchen. I mean, whoever would read this probably doesn't have both a kitchen and a living room. It's probably one room. Let it go and find a way to make people comfortable while you finish cooking. You hear? What kind of dinner party could you have? They're all in the kitchen. Watch for the wallflower. Relax. Imagine how you would want to feel and treat your guests exactly that way. A KS wrote it. Oh, my God.
Savage.
Now, Fat Al's tuna, that's a recipe. When I was a boy working as a busboy in the Shanks Paramount Hotel, I saw how tuna was really made. Fat Al was a 350-pounder. Now, when he made tuna in a tureen, he didn't use a mixed mass. They used his hairy forearm. He had his cigarette dangling from the right side of his mouth, and the kitchen was banging and bustling, and the people were out there eating a ninth meal of the afternoon. And he was mixing a tuna. He would throw the cans of tuna in. They'd throw in vats of mayonnaise. And the guy stirred it with his arm. He rolled up his undershirt. You see, you got to visualize this. Fat Al would lean over that tureen with the arm, the big, giant Italian arm, full of hair. And his arm was mayonnaise thick up to his armpit. And he's got the arm moving around. And he said, you see, kid, you keep moving it till you get a nice, creamy consistency. Meanwhile, the ash is falling off his cigarette. I guess that helped the taste of the tuna because the people never complained. They loved it. Now, that's a tuna. There is a proper tuna with a little sweat and arm hair. Now, that is a good tuna fish recipe. Other than that, I don't want to talk about recipes. Here's a story on the two faces of England that caught my eye. It said, Englishmen quayed up to denounce their country as being sick and depraved in an article in Der Spiegel. According to the German magazine, our island story is now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains and racists, and our only heroes are philandering footballers. We have become a nation ill at ease with ourselves. It sounds like America. Now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains, and racists. And the only thing missing from that list are phony liberals. Our only heroes are philandering footballers, so we could substitute philandering basketball players. We've become a nation ill at ease with ourselves. Yet in the same week, a new guidebook paints Britain as an idyllic country where everything stops for afternoon tea, complete with cucumber sandwiches and crumpets. Delicious fruitcakes and jam sponges. Everyone wears tweed in the country, and the trains generally run on time. The only problem with the English is they can't speak the language properly. That's the one problem with them. They never, like, kept up with the times. They speak kind of a brittle, older language that's not really – doesn't really resemble the English that I know. And it doesn't work for them anymore. That's why they're shriveling as a nation. Can you name one British talk show host that sells in the world? No. People don't like that British accent was hot in the 60s. Everyone hired like a chick who had a British accent because all the Jewish guys in the garment center got hot for that. You know what I mean? Yes, Mr. Katz is not here. They always hired him in the garment center. That's who they hired. But that's over with. No one won. Now they want like a Puerto Rican one or Mexican. That's like in a certain way, it's reverse de classe. If you got someone who speaks that kind of parochial English, it's more appealing in a certain way, very in your face. No one wants that English thing. That's over. In the 60s, yes. Right through the late 50s, early 60s, the Twiggy, the Beatles, the Aston Martin, the whole thing was very cool. But then the English thing died with the breakdown of the nation with immigration, with the breakdown of because of the asylum and the liberalism and the whole thing. England is no more. I mean, they're just not what they were. So it's fine if you like it. I'm not knocking it. But the English accent does not play the same way that I enjoy listening to it. It's kind of archaic and cute in its own way. But it's not used in the same – how many people do you call up today in business and get that English girl accent? No one. No one anymore. I'm not putting it down. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that no one is into the English accent thing as cool. In fact, it has a reverse effect on people. I never forget when I was in graduate school, I had a professor I really admired a lot. Now, he was an American, PhD, a really fine chemist. He was the chairman of the pharmacology department, and I was doing graduate studies under him, and I love this guy. He had come from a major American pharmaceutical firm and retired to teach pharmacology, and I really admired this guy, okay? Now, he's not a New Yorker, but he spoke a regular Midwestern New York accent. I never forget, I was thinking of this just the other day while shaving. An English professor had come to meet him and talk about something, and the Englishman walked in and said something like, "Daryl Devonshire here," and he said, "I'm Frank, how are you?" In other words, he didn't get intimidated by the Derby Devonshire thing, nor did Derby Devonshire necessarily do it to rank him out. He may have. But the point I'm making is that by answering in his own accent, he was he, and the other guy was he. You know what I'm saying? He was he. So learn to be who you are. Don't try to change yourself. Believe me, I could speak corporatese as good as the next guy. I was a corporate consultant for many years. And I found out as time went on, I don't have to sound like I'm from the Midwest in order for people to understand me. They're listening to my ideas, and they will listen to the New York accent just as well. As a matter of fact, it's kind of engaging for many Americans because it is so unusual for them to hear an authentic New York accent in an age where everybody's been corporatized into some sanitized, homogenized, Martinized American.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Carl, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Good evening, Michael. My comment is this. I think that Hollywood has really lost its focus. 60 years ago when Ronald Reagan was running around in the Screen Actors Guild, there was a commitment by Ronald and those who shared his ideology to fight communism. Their thought was, let's do it through the wonderful Hollywood media machine that we have.
Right.
That's long gone. They fought tooth and nail against the people, the subversives, the liberal losers in that industry. Very, very...
And now the entire industry, 99%, is taken over by the radical left, who are attacking our government, attacking the president, not attacking Islamofascism, not showing us the real threats of Islamofascism, never showing the hundreds of thousands of marchers and goose steps with AK-47s with black masks, instead hating George Bush and Republicans more than they do the Islamofascist movement.
We get garbage movie like the Sleep Around Warren Beatty and Reds and every other sort of crap movie that portrays...
But why is it that so many celebrities who come up from their drug and alcohol-induced orgies, they swim up to reality for a few minutes a day, and all they can think of doing is attacking America and attacking the president? What is it about them? Angelica Houston is going to release a letter signed by 100 stupid celebrities who want President Bush to stop talking about Iraq. Signed by stars, including Kim Basinger. When was she last in a movie? Matt Damon. Lawrence Fishburne. When was he last in a winning movie? It's always the losers. This is what I'm trying to tell you, is that most of the radical left in Hollywood consists of those whose careers are on the rocks. Most, not all. Most. Most of them are passé. You know that? Do you agree with me on that, Carl?
Yeah, I'd say mostly. I'd say, too, that, though, if Angelica Houston persuades Barbara Streisand, though, to sign that letter, look for her signature, Michael. It'll be the only one there that's just a big X.
Yeah, but that's why they call it fun. That's why they call her Funny Girl. There's something funny upstairs. Okay, look, I made my point. Hollywood, instead of putting out propaganda movies encouraging America to fight this tide of fascism, by any other name, it's fascistic. It is Hitler all over again in a headscarf. It's Hitler in a headscarf. Hitler in a headscarf. Hitler is back. He's not marching with an oompa-pa band. He doesn't have a swastika. He has a headscarf! Morons! Morons, you're insane. You are insane. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how famous you are. Knows. You're morons. You're sick. You're mentally ill. All of you. I don't care how many limos you step out of. I don't care how many flashlights go off. I don't know how many Klieg lights you stood under. You're morons, and you are insane. Turn the TV on at night. There it is. 100,000, 200,000 goose steppers with AK-47s. Kill the Jews! 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 Kill the Christian! Kill the Christian! Kill the Christian! Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews! And there's Angelica Houston. There is Barbara Streisand. There's the others attacking President Bush. They have more hatred for Republicans than they do for Islamofascism. They have more hatred for President Bush than they do for Osama bin Laden. So, ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. Red diaper doper babies, RDDBs. The Hollywood left, the liberal left in journalism like this Peter Arnett who goes over there and tries to make us look bad just before, on the eve of war, they will kill us. They will be responsible, if anyone, for the death of this country. They will kill us. This is no longer free speech. This is sedition. They are endangering your sons and daughters who are going over there. They are weakening their resolve. They are weakening their resolve. They are emboldening the enemy. If that's not a sedition, I'd like to know what is. I know what the word means. I know very well what the word means. Do you?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tucson, Arizona. TJ, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm responding to the comments Sally Fields made about if women were ruling things, this world would be better and there wouldn't be any wars. My contention that if women were ruling things, this world would be far worse than what it is. And I cite the examples is the dating habits of women. There are a lot of men joining the Bloods and the Crips to get girls. A lot of times I've been picked on or harassed or whatever by men, it was because they were trying to get the sexual favors of other women. It was a woman.
You're saying that men fight with each other because of women to show that they're more dominant?
And I'm also saying that because women are responsive to that, by virtue of that, they encourage violence in men.
Some women do. I would say that is true. There's actually a biological, you know, imperative in the sense that the women want the most viable male to produce offspring with. She wants usually a man who can defend her and who is, more liable to produce a strong child. When it gets carried to the extreme of killing over a woman, of course, I think that's another story. But look, let's look at the animal kingdom in order to draw some conclusions, TJ. The moose who will bang heads in order to attract the female. Wherever you look, you're going to see male animals fighting with each other in order to get the female. Isn't that true? Look at the lions. They'll chase, the old male will be chased away eventually by a younger lion. He is then shunned from the tribe. He's no longer considered a viable mate for the women, the girl lions, the female lions, rather. They want the most viable male. And in our society, the women tend to want a nerdy guy today rather than the macho guy. The smart women do, because they know the nerdy guy will make more money and probably is smart enough to avoid getting killed.
Uh-huh. Well, you see, you're making the point that in order to impress a woman, you have to behave like an animal.
I mean, You got me there, TJ. And by the way, I'm not going to argue with you.
It was a woman who wanted the head of John the Baptist on a silver platter.
TJ, you set me up pretty good on that one. I got to thank you for it. I don't know any examples in history of benevolent women leaders. Do you? I mean, which women leaders come to mind as let's say there'd be no wars if there were women leaders? Who are they thinking about? Let's say there was a woman leader of Pakistan. Remember Bhutto? Her father had been assassinated. Then she became a leader of Pakistan. I mean, wherever you look, okay, Golda Meir, she was far more macho and had more of, you know what, more testosterone than Shimon Peres. How about Margaret Thatcher? I mean, I admire those women, but they weren't peaceniks. None of them were.
But sometimes you need to have war. Sometimes if you avoid a war, it causes a war. I mean, for example...
Absolutely, and sometimes it's better to have a war early on before your enemy becomes too strong and you're going to... Let's, for example, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Right now he's a pipsqueak. He can be wiped out overnight. He has no military to speak of. He is, though, in cahoots with Ahmadinejad. He's trying to get nuclear weapons. He's buying submarines. This guy, if he is not stopped, will wind up causing a bigger war, and there'll be more Americans and Venezuelans dying 5 years from now or 10 years from now than they would die right now. So an argument can be made that he should be stopped before he gets bigger. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, go back to World War II. Had William Chamberlain had not been appeasing Hitler, and had we just taken him out from the beginning? As a matter of fact, I heard a story that the orders were cut to arrest Hitler for violating the previous treaties from World War One.
Yes,
and,
you're 100% right. If Hitler had been stopped at Munich, World War II could have been aborted. Tens of millions of people wouldn't have died. It's the same with Ahmadinejad coming to New York. Why should a new Hitler, which is who Ahmadinejad is spiritually, intellectually, in every way, he's saying the same things Hitler did. He wants the nuclear weapons so he can terrorize the world and kill people. He does not want it for peaceful reasons. If that man was stopped now, we could avoid a larger war, which is why, thank God, George Bush is showing all the signs of doing the right thing, and so is France. I hope they do. I hope they do go ahead with it. I don't know where you stand on that one. Do you think we should go and take out Iranian military targets?
Oh, definitely. I think we should have done that when we went in with Iraq at the same time. Oh, getting back to women, though, there's a belief system that women mature faster than men, and I don't believe that. I believe women just at an earlier age desire to have a mate. That does not necessarily equate with the fact that women are mature, because all you have to do is look at how they behave in divorce courts.
You know, you're the best misogynist I've had on in years, TJ. You really sound jaundiced. What happened to you?
Well, first of all, some of the most cruelest things have either been done to me either by women or by men who were trying to impress women, and I've made those observations very young in life. I wasn't even a teenager by that point, and I don't worship women.
I'm not going to argue with you. You're not the only man on earth who feels a little intimidated by the gentle sex. All I know is this. When the Year of the Woman came along in Congress around 92, 93, 94, do you remember the speeches we heard? That when women were elected, we'd have a more gentler Congress, et cetera. Now, I ask you, when you look at Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Mikulski, do you feel that we have a gentler, kinder Congress?
We have a cattier Congress.
Well, let's look at Dianne Feinstein and her husband, Richard Blum. Would you say that we have a more honest Senate with Dianne Feinstein as a U.S. Senator?
No,
do you
sir.
Think that if a man did what Dianne Feinstein allegedly is doing, in terms of steering contracts from committees that she sat on, defense contracts to her. Let's say it was a man sitting on a defense committee, and he steers contracts to his wife's consulting firm, and she's worth hundreds of billions of dollars. Do you think that man would have stayed in office as long as Dianne Feinstein has?
Yes, sir, as long as he was a catty, effeminized, liberal man. Yes, sir.
You got me there again. You have a pretty good sense of humor, TJ. How do you survive in Tucson, Arizona? Are you calling from penitentiary?
In a way, yes, sir.
You incarcerated? Because I did invite people from prisons to call last week.
No,
are you actually calling from? You're not in a lock. You're in a mental hospital or a prison?
No, I meant that more figuratively, not literally.
I know you did. I was just kidding. But you have any relationships with women at all? Mother, sister, children, daughters? No.
Right now, I'm trying to get over a sports injury, so I'm staying away from the dating scene. But to be honest with you, it was my sister who re-injured my sporting injury.
So you're saying you were in a cast and she came in and twisted your ankle?
More specifically, I have torn cartilage in my back, and she took me on this back mountain dirt road with a bunch of potholes on it, and I told her that I had a physician's order to stay off of pothole-ridden roads. She lied to me, and her husband drove like about 50 miles an hour over the potholes, and so I have an MRI report that shows that my disc was healing.
Oh, my God. This is a really serious story here. So you're a little leery of women to begin with. Now, on top of it all, your own blood turns out to be untrustworthy when it comes to this.
Let me tell you this story. Whenever I'm in bars and I'm meeting women and telling me about how rotten the ex-boyfriends were and abusive, I ask them, you know, well, what's he doing? And when they kind of shrug their shoulders and say, I don't know, I'll tell them straight up, well, if you can't even tell me what the problem is and what he's doing, how do I know that you're not the one that's instigating the bad behaviors? And, you know, a lot of women are actually turned on by that. You know, I've never had a drink thrown in my face, but the bottom line is you can go into bars all over the country with a bunch of women who are berating their exes, and every man knows that they're lying, and whatever it is they did that to provoke that the problem is being left out of the story. But still, men will, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. So, you know, you have to go, and stare them in the eye, too, and buy them another drink.
See, nobody tells women the truth when they're wrong. And so what you have is a whole society of women who really don't have a good fix.
Yeah, well, you want to get a heart attack, tell a woman when she's wrong. Have you met a woman yet who will admit she's wrong in your whole life?
I've met some women where you could get away with it more than other women. And
I'm amazed. There are some brilliant, intelligent women out there who can never admit they're wrong, though. There's something about the feline nature of a woman that it's very hard for them to say they were wrong. I don't get that. I don't understand that part of it. If I'm wrong, I admit I'm wrong. It's not easy for me, but I'll have to admit it in order to go forward myself. Okay, you're an honest guy. I want to ask you something. You heard the story I read from the website, federal prosecutor arrested in child sexting. He was trying to have sex with a 5-year-old girl. What do you think of a story like this? What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction to that is the death penalty for people who do things like that. One appeal, and that'll get rid of those kinds of problems.
But could you believe this man works for the U.S. Justice Department as an assistant U.S. attorney in Florida?
Yes, sir, I can. I mean, just look at the activities of the ACLU and what our criminal judicial system's letting them get away with. I mean,
You're good. TJ, you should head up the Savage Nation in Tucson. You're like a one-man Savage Nation in Tucson.
I could probably do it for maybe 15 minutes.
You wouldn't have patience, I know. Well, let me send you a gift. I got to send you a gift. You pick it. You want the CD? You want the Healing Children Naturally? You want the Alzheimer's book? Anything else I can send you from the cornucopia of Savage items?
The CD would be great.
TJ, stay on the line. We're going to get you the Michael Savage DVD Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Mag. You'll see me gesticulating wildly with my New Yorker hands. Teddy does make a little doggy appearance. He's not a SAG employee, so I got him for cheap. I got him for not even a bone out of that one. I got him for a cup of water and a pat on the head.
Savage.
Life goes on. Every day I read the obituaries. This one died at 48. That one stood up and had embolism and dropped dead at 51. The next day you read another one, a woman, the head, got a head, rose to the top of the MGM studio. Next thing, breast cancer, then dead in 2 months. So, you know, when you reach the point in life where you start reading the obituaries, you know you're in trouble. I've been reading them for 30 years. I love obituaries. They're all leftists. They never write an obituary of any centrist or conservative. I know they won't cover me when I die. You know, a PhD, 2 master's degrees, saved many rainforests, rescued folklore, wrote 20 books, pioneer in this, 2 best-selling books, famous radio host, won't even mention me. I don't fit the agenda. But if they get a communist lawyer in New York who you forgot about in 1940, he was already forgotten. They dig people up, Morton Pepperblatt. I'm making up a name. Names, you don't even know why they're in there. Morton Pepperblatt. Famous in the 1940s for rescuing workers from the oppressive labor union of the Firemen's Guild. And he leaves behind, a cat and a dog. Well, that's the way it is. It's their newspaper. He can do what he wants with it.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
If you look at the Middle East, you can take the pictures and you can distort them in any way you want. You can make Israel into the aggressor. You can make the underdog Israel into the overdog. And the media is doing it. What's amazing to me, and we have the montage here, is that the media is actually taking the side of Hezbollah, even though the Arab League and even though the Saudi Arabians, even though the Egyptians, even though the Jordanians have taken the side of Israel, saying to Hezbollah, you started this, now finish it. Even though this terrorist group is hated by every civilized person on the planet, the scum in the media in America has taken the side of Hezbollah. What more do you need to know that you already don't know about them? You may say, why did they do this? I have said liberalism is a mental disorder. Maybe that's one explanation. All the years of marijuana could explain it. I really don't know why they would support people who would slash their throat like a sheep going, bah. So I'm going to get into the Middle East in a moment. But I want to show you that numbers don't lie. Matt Drudge does lie with numbers. So let's start with the heat wave. Many of you will think, wow, it must be global warming, man. The kids are using fire pumps in the streets, or the hot streets. When I was a kid in the Bronx, we opened up the fire hydrants because it was so hot. Now, that's not factually interesting. It's just an interesting anecdote. So let's look at the facts. Here are the facts. I looked up the record highest temperatures by state and by date, and it proves that Al Gore lies and global warming is a lie. Okay, for example, I'll go by state for you. Alabama, the highest temperature on record, 1925, 112 degrees. Alaska, 1915, 100 degrees. This is before really cars were in Alaska, like 1915. What could there have been a few hundred cars there? 1936 was a very hot year. Arkansas, 120 degrees. California, what was the hottest year in California? Why, it was 1913, long before the Model T Ford. 134 degrees in California, in Greenland Ranch, California. 134 degrees, but what is the important date? 1913. So let's go to Colorado. Is it global warming? What's the highest temperature on record? 118 degrees. When did it occur? Yesterday? No, 1888. Before automobiles were on the roads in Colorado, it was 118 degrees in 1888. Now, I'm a man who's trained in science with a PhD from a real great university. So to me, I like to do my research, and I'm going to get to showing you with this how they distort everything. 1888, Colorado, 118 degrees, and so on. 1930, Washington, D.C., it was 106 degrees. 1931 in Hawaii, the record, 100 degrees in Hawaii, 1931. 1934, Idaho. Remember Drudge tried to tell you that North Dakota had broken all records? Well, that's Drudge for you, a high school dropout. What does he know about anything? He's a web guy who makes stuff up, apparently. And he's a company girl for WABC, so he lies, tries to distort the numbers, because he's part of the cabal that hates Michael Savage. So let's look at North Dakota. Highest record on temperature, Matt Boy, 1936, Matty Boy, 121 degrees. 1936, Boy Chick, 121 degrees. 1898, Oregon, 119 degrees. I know you want to talk about Islamofascism, and I will. But this is very important. 1898 was the record high temperature for Oregon, 119 degrees, long before Al Gore's great-grandfather was Randy on the ranch. 1936, South Dakota, 120 degrees. 1895, Mormon country, Utah, 1895, 117 degrees. Have you learned anything from this yet, boys and girls? The year 1900, the record's broken, Wyoming, 114 degrees. Those are the temperatures in the United States by state, the highest temperatures on record. So before you start talking about, wow, it must be global warming, you better look up the facts. Now let's move to the next set of facts, since I am a man who believes in data. The radio ratings have just come in. And what's important is the truth. In the 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. slot where I am broadcast live on WOR in New York, in the audience, the largest audience of people 12 and above, I'm number one. That's WOR number one, WABC number two, WCBS number three, WFAN number four, WINS, grew up with that, number five, WFNY number six, WLIB number seven. That's a ranker for the 6 to 9 p.m. numbers, the actual ratings, not distorted by a high school dropout who has a big website. And that's all you need to know. Michael Savage is, in fact, the king of New York City radio, and I don't need anybody else to tell you about it because my audience is enough. Now let's move to the Middle East. We've got war reportage from the Middle East that is being distorted the same way radio numbers are being distorted, the same way temperatures are being distorted, as you will hear in the following montage. Listen.
Just an update on what you believe the situation is in the Middle East right now. Has Israel overreacted, as some have said?
Actually, yes. The feeling in the Middle East, Israel is overreacting, and it does enjoy the support of the United States.
A lot of people are wondering and emailing us and saying, why is Israel holding the Lebanese government responsible for something that they may not be responsible for and likely aren't?
There is growing support for Hezbollah, especially for Hassan Nasrallah. He is emerging as a leading voice for a large amount of disenfranchised people who feel that this just highlights an ongoing struggle that has happened within this region.
Collective punishment against all of Lebanon and Palestine.
It's somewhat surprising that after a week of being pounded by the Israelis, the Katyusha fire continues unabated.
Israeli warplanes pounded more targets in and around Beirut today, bringing the death toll in Lebanon to at least 183.
We witnessed for many hours this morning, and we've heard for many hours throughout the rest of today and tonight, fierce barrages of artillery fire directed at what they say is trying to neutralize the Hezbollah capability.
Yes, yes. Christiane Amanpour, a man really needs to pour a big one when he takes a look at her, obviously, and that is, of course, why... The water carrier for Madeleine Albright, Jamie, whatever his name was, married her. Obviously, he needs a big pouring after he looks at her. I mean, but she's not alone anymore. The entire cabal in the media is turning against Israel and taking the side of this terrorist group, Hezbollah. They want the throat cutters to win.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.